We're going to hear a piece that might sound a little familiar. It's also a brilliantly made piece and a wonderfully funny one. And by the way, it's supposed to be funny. Something, alas, that has all but vanished from serious music these days. Music by the American composer John Biggs. A piece called Pastiche. Piece called, for obvious reasons, Pastiche by John Biggs. And performance by the Czech Radio Symphony, led by Vladimir Valek. How could they not keep cracking up as they're playing that piece? You know, it sounds like one or two takes.
Yeah, and it would have been fun to play.
And it's too bad that the Hoffnung Music Festivals, you know, went out of business with the death of Gerard Hoffnung.
Yeah, this would
have been a perfect curtain raiser.
I wish they were still going. I would have submitted it to them.
Oh, they would have played it in a flash. I'm sure. What possessed you to do it? I mean, if I can ask so personally.
I had a commission from the Ventura. That's the best motivation. From the Ventura County Symphony. It was conducted by Frank Salazar at that time. And I've written pieces that have a kind of pastiche of texts. My eccentricities goes into a lot of different bizarre, unusual texts, so I'm into mixes like that. And I knew I could handle it, and I just sat there, and I did all these things by heart. I didn't look at any of the scores. I just did them by ear from what I heard and ran them together.
Yeah, and imagine having fun with serious music.
I mean,
I think one of the saddest things that's happened in the last 30 or 40 years is it's gotten so grimly serious.
Yeah, I know. We need humor.
We sure do.
Yeah.
We sure do. Well, I've been joined tonight by the American composer John Biggs. We're going to be playing some of his music during the next couple of hours and talking about whatever he feels like. John Biggs, welcome to KUSC.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
And my first real exposure, serious exposure to you, was via one of the best oboe concertos I'm aware of, and I'm aware of all of them because I used to play this miserable thing.
I know.
And it is, an astonishing piece in and of itself because of how well it speaks the language of oboe. And number two, it's a piece written by a guy in his mid-20s.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I was at UCLA. Actually, Lucas Foss was instrumental in getting that done there. And Ferry Roth was the guy that conducted the string orchestra. And Peter Crist, who went on to fame with his wind quintet, traveling all over the world with that wind quintet, he was the oboe soloist. He was the one I wrote it for, actually.
So writing for a guy like that in his prime, you could write whatever you felt like writing, because this guy could play it.
Yes, he really could.
The second movements, I mean, the outer movements are just so witty and full of life. And the slow movement, there's a lot of pain there. At least I hear a lot of pain.
People have told me that I'm best when I'm writing slow movements. I remember in the hallway at UCLA the day after that premiere, Natalie Lemonic, you know who she is?
Oh, absolutely.
She came up to me, held both my hands, looked in my eyes, and she said, John, that slow movement is just gorgeous.
Yeah. Well, here is the oboe concerto music from the year was
1959.
The oboe concerto from 1959 by John Biggs. Jana Borskova is the soloist. The Moravian Philharmonic is led by Vit Mitska. Concerto for Oboe and Strings, music from 1959 by John Biggs. Jana Borskova was the oboist. The Moravian Philharmonic was led by Vit Mitska. Well, if oboe concertos are fairly scarce on the ground, I think viola concertos are even less common for reasons that I find it difficult to understand.
Well, the viola doesn't project from the stage like the violin does or the cello. It's got to have a very careful balance of its accompaniment. That's why I did it for viola, six winds, and percussion. So the viola has no string competition.
Yeah, brilliant.
And I learned that idea from Miklos Rocha, whose viola concerto, somebody asked him, how is it I can hear the viola all the way through this piece? And he said, I never have the viola playing much when the strings are playing, only when the winds are playing.
Yeah.
And then it stands out from a standpoint of timbre.
Yeah. It's a terrific piece, his viola concerto.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it is.
Yeah. So is yours. And the genesis of the piece sort of has a USC connection.
Yeah, it's interesting. I came as a grad student. I was actually a composer in residence in Kansas at that time, but I took a summer off and came to USC to have a course with Halsey Stevens. And, okay, John, what will be our project? And I said, I'd like to write a viola concerto. Okay. And then that was about all that was said, because I would come in and show him the sketches, and he'd say, looks good to me. So that piece just flowed out. I remember when you think about spontaneous composition, I was standing in line to get my junior college teaching credential. Standing in line, I had the manuscript in my hand, and I asked somebody, would you save my place, please? And I sat down and was writing something that I needed to get down on paper right away. And then my time to go to the counter came up, and I quit. But it was coming out that fast. And it didn't get premiered here. It got premiered, do you remember the Brit Music Festival in Oregon? Peter Britt Music Festival?
Yeah, sure.
It was run by John Trudeau. John Trudeau asked me to submit some pieces to him. This was a score that hadn't been premiered yet. And he liked it. And so I conducted the premiere of it in the Brit Festival. I think it was 1968, close to when it was written.
Yeah.
And I remember that performance because I walked up on the podium, and they were all sitting there, and the first flutist was very nervously looking through her parts, very nervously. And she had forgotten it. She had left it in the car. So I, being a pro, the pro I am, I had a briefcase and I had an extra set of parts just in case. She looked so relieved. She sat down. She sat down with a big smile and we started the piece.
Flute players.
Yeah.
Flute players. Well, here is the Concerto for Viola, Woodwinds, and Percussion by John Biggs. The soloist is Paul Silverthorne. The Czech National Symphony, members thereof, are led by the late, great Paul Freeman.
Thank you.
Concerto for Viola, Woodwinds and Percussion by John Biggs, played by violist Paul Silverthorne, and the Czech National Symphony, conducted by Paul Freeman. Now, as much, you know, virtuosity as the outer movements of the violin concerto requires, there's this abiding, at least to my ear, feeling of serenity throughout the entire piece, not only throughout the gorgeous slow movement, but the whole piece sounds wonderfully relaxed.
The slow movement is very short, too. It's only 5 minutes and something. But it was coming from the heart and from the emotions. And the outer two movements, I find they have a lot of vitality and a lot of rhythmic variety. I like the piece. I wish the balance were a little better. The violins, they wanted to do it like the audience hears it, you know, and not put a mic on the violin soloist. She was good enough to be put in the foreground more. But she was wonderful. She just walked on the stage and played it by heart, actually.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And by serenity, I didn't mean, you know, not, as you said, you know, rhythmically vital and stuff. But maybe serenity is not the right word. There's a phrase that Elgar used to use so often, Pietro Vole, which means just basically pleasant. That's a bad word for it. But, you know, it's just sort of a amiable, easygoing piece in the best possible sense.
Well, thank you.
So the circumstances of its composition?
Well, I wish the piece were performed by violinists. I've tried to get them interested over these last 30 years with no luck. I was living in Santa Barbara in a cottage on Elmer Bernstein's property on Picacho Lane in Montecito, and that was shortly after my mother had died. I wrote my Songs of Laughter, Love, and Tears was the first piece that came out. And these were all pieces that were written for an ensemble that was active at that time, Montecito Chamber Orchestra. And there was an absolutely wonderful violinist in Santa Barbara, and she still lives there. Her name is Nina Bodner Horton. She went on to be the concert mistress, I guess they say concert master now, for both sexes. She was the concert master of the St. Louis Symphony for a while. Then she got a problem with her hand and had to bow out. She came back to Santa Barbara. But she was the inspiration for that piece. And she just played a beautiful premiere of it. It was just gorgeous. There was a really nice review in the Santa Barbara News Press, too. So it got a good start, and it got a good recording. And violinists out there, if you want to take a look at this piece, you know, let me know.
Well, it took the Sibelius a while to catch on, too, as a matter of fact.
Well, it's interesting that you would say that, because the review said this concerto should get into the repertoire, and it will take its place along with the Sibelius and one other, I can't remember what it was.
Yeah, but really were. Well, the Martineau, for instance, another piece that doesn't get done very often.
The Martineau Violin Concerto?
Yeah.
I don't know it. I'm surprised because I love Martineau.
Yeah. Now, you were telling me earlier about the oboe concerto, how it just sort of flowed out of you. This seems a little odd given how meticulously well-made all of this stuff seems. Is that the same with the violin concerto? I mean, was it?
Well, I'm a form person, and I'm always concerned with exactly where I'm going and in how much time. I know it might sound funny to the audience. They might say, oh, he's very calculating. But I can't write unless I have a picture of where I'm going and what material I'm going to use. A lot of things come while I'm writing. They'll come in a developmental sense. They'll take shape as a surprise to me also. But I always know where I'm going. That's what I can say about Brahms, too. I think Brahms always knew where he was going. So that's why you maybe reacted to the structure of those pieces.
Yeah. Not only the structure, but the craftsmanship, too.
Thank you.
They are so beautifully put together.
Thank you.
We'll hear from the late 1980s is the Violin Concerto by John Biggs. Jana Hedonova is the violinist. The Moravian Philharmonic is led once again by Vit Mitschka. Thank you. Concerto for Violin and Orchestra, music from 1986 by John Biggs. Jana Hedanova was the violinist. The Moravian Philharmonic was led by Vitmitchka. Well, in addition to writing all of this orchestral music, you also have produced an enormous amount of stuff for the human voice. In fact, there's that wonderful picture of you at a recording session with Igor Stravinsky.
Right. That was a little recording studio on Santa Monica Boulevard near La Brea, right in Hollywood. And it was a recording with members of the Roger Wagner Chorale, a select number, because the music was so difficult. It was in Stravinsky's 12-tone period, and Treni and Canticum Sacrum we were recording. And during one of the breaks, I had a one-on-one with Stravinsky. He was on the podium, and we were talking. And the funny thing about that, Jim, is that there was a bassoonist in the studios at that time, but he called me about 20 years later, and he says, John, I have a picture of you talking with Stravinsky. Would you like to have a copy? And I said, Jim, where has it been all this time? Yes. Of course I'd like to have a copy. So he sent it along to me, and it's been one of my cherished collections, you know, just a wonderful picture to have.
Yeah, a souvenir of the days when this really was the musical capital of the known universe.
I mean, oh, yeah.
Schoenberg lived here, Stravinsky lived here, Mio lived here.
Yeah.
Lots of interesting
things. Oh, yeah, there were many that came from Europe, and partly because of the freedom here and also because of the quality of the studio musicians who were available to them. I mean, look at Korngold. Gee, he came from Vienna and did all those absolutely gorgeous scores. And I don't think they really knew how great he was when he was here. You know?
Yeah, something Andre Previn has always said about it. He said, you know, Hollywood didn't change Korngold. Korngold changed Hollywood.
Yeah, if he changed it, he changed it for the better.
Oh, yeah.
As far as quality and who could live up to his scores. It was really a difficult task, but they certainly did, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, why don't we continue with what sounds like a deeply personal piece, the songs of Laughter, Love, and Tears.
It is a very personal piece because I moved from Fullerton, California after the breakup of my marriage to singer Sally Terry, and I moved into the little cottage on the property of Elmer Bernstein, who was kind enough to let me rent that place. And I wrote a lot of pieces there. Just music just started falling out. You know, I had to make a living too, so I had to tune pianos, which I was doing for about 45 years. That kept me going. But this piece was the first I wrote after my mother died and I moved and changed, started a new life. And I pulled together some texts that were really dear to me, with the centerpiece being Annabel Lee of Edgar Allan Poe. It's about a 6.5-minute piece by itself. And the rest of them are really very diverse. There's one about a woman who falls in love with a pig, and she's talking to the pig. There's also one about a wonderful, it's a Swedish poet. I can't remember his name. The guy's riding on horseback. He's coming to his lover. He's bringing flowers. He's just, all the pieces have a lot of variety in them. And I think tenor and string orchestra is a wonderful combination. And of course, when I heard Britten's Serenade for Tenor, Horn, and Strings at UCLA when I was a student, I just fell in love with it. Mm-hmm. This doesn't have horn, but it has a terrific tenor, Jonathan Mack, who was on your own faculty here.
Yeah. Well, here is that song cycle, Songs of Laughter, Love, and Tears by John Biggs. The tenor is Jonathan Mack. The Crystal Chamber Orchestra is led by David Amos.
Bright is the ring of words when the right man rings them. Feather form of songs when the singer sings them. Still they are caroled and said on wings they are carried. After the singer is dead
songs of laughter, love, and tears by John Biggs, performed by tenor Jonathan Mack, and the Crystal Chamber Orchestra, led by David Amos. We've been spending part of this evening with the American composer John Biggs here on 91.5 Classical KUSC, the member-supported broadcast service of the University of Southern California. So you're still composing?
Somewhat. I had a piece for flute. I looked at my catalog, and I didn't have much for flute. And there was a pretty good flutist in Ventura and a wonderful pianist. And I put them together for a piece called Saraband, Fandango, and Quickstep. And they did a really nice job of premiering it last October. In fact, on my birthday, October 18th. Just by chance, they didn't know that.
Okay. Yeah, Gustav Holst used to say, never compose anything unless it becomes a positive annoyance not to.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, I would still compose if there were people out there that wanted something, you know. It's funny because I had two operas premiere up there, two really wonderful reviews. And operas by an unknown composer, forget it. Try it. It took 17 years to get a second performance of my Ernest Worthing, which is on the play The Importance of Being Earnest by Oscar Wilde, whom I love dearly. And they had a concert of opera arias in Ventura recently, and I knew a couple of the singers. And, you know, nobody approached me about doing anything from my opera. And so I saw one of the sopranos at another concert about a week ago. And I said, hey, Virginia, you asked me when you were walking out, why didn't we do something of yours? And then you kept walking. And I have an answer for you. It's because nobody asked.
There you go. There you go. And as all composers know, getting that first performance is relatively, I didn't want to say easy. If somebody commissions it, then it's incredibly easy because they're paying it for it. The tough thing is that second performance.
Right.
And then the third. Maybe a word or two about Birds, with which we're going to conclude.
Yeah, Birds. Well, Robbie, my partner, said to John, you have to include Birds. Birds was a text that was given to me by my wife at that time, Sally Terry. She collected things for me to set, and I still have a paperclip with a lot of her suggestions in it. This was out of an article about birds and what words were used to put them in groupings. I don't know where these concepts came from, but let's see, a gaggle of geese, a baling of ducks, a sword of mallards. So I found those all fascinating, and I put them all together in this piece, and it's really fun to sing.
Good enough. John Biggs, been a great pleasure.
Oh, thanks so much, Jim.
And here is Birds by John Biggs.
Over the years, men have used a number of special terms to describe birds in various groupings. And here is our sort of birds of all in the English language. A siege of herons or bitter,
what's up, a wild fowl,
a gaggle, a gaggle, a gaggle, a gaggle, a gaggle.